Well, thanks everyone for coming, and thanks all of you for spending your evening with us too. I know it's a busy season right now. The challenge with this is going to be that we have 12 candidates here. So I ask that you keep your comments brief, and we have two people up here. There's one person up here now, and we will be timing you. And so when you're 30 seconds from the end, you get the yellow card. And then when you are at the end, you will get the red card. So first, how we're going to do this is we're going to start off with introductions by all of you. And then we have questions that folks submitted online, and they covered, you know, various topics. I'm going to address those questions to different districts and have you answer. And you'll have 2 minutes to answer. And then for the end of the evening, I'm going to open it to the floor. And so I hope the few of you who are here, I hope you have come with questions. We'll have people in the audience where you can use the microphones or you can submit online. And I'll go through that once we get to that section. But to start off, we'll start with the introductions. And over here, we'll start with District 1, which covers the northern part of the county. We have Rhonda Lennon, the incumbent, and we have Christine Mast. And so let's start off, Rhonda Lennon, why are you running for election, re-election? And let me start, you have 1 minute each for this
one. Awesome, that's going to ask, because I could tell you about that for about 10 minutes. I'm currently serving District 1 on the school board, and I'm running for re-election because I believe that a positive voice can make a difference on our school board. I am the candidate that has 10 years experience making a positive difference on education in my part of the county. In my first 4 years, we faced many challenges, including the worst economic crisis of our generation and the loss of our superintendent. But during that time, we still managed to do a lot of great things like improve academic outcomes, graduation rates, and I spearheaded the efforts to save middle school sports. But the thing I am really the most proud of is that I have worked collaboratively with my board members, with the staff, with the local, state, and federal leaders to start moving CMS from a good system to a great system. We were just recently awarded the best governance team by the National School Board Association. Effective, collaborative, and experienced leadership are what is needed to keep moving the system forward, and I ask for your support on November 5th.
And Ms. Mass, I'm going to ask you to direct the microphone a little bit closer to you, and you all will, you know, have to kind of take turns sharing the microphone. So please tell us, Ms. Mass, why you decided to run.
Good evening. My name is Christine Mast. I grew up in Wisconsin, and I went to Marquette University, graduated with an accounting degree. I also have my CPA certificate. Why I'm running is, first and foremost, I'm a mom to two kids that go to Blythe Elementary. My youngest is in kindergarten this year. My oldest is in third grade. And after being involved in CMS advocacy for the last 2.5 years, I thought this was a great time for me to get involved and try to become a board member. With my CPA background, I have extensive experience analyzing budgets and other type of data. With the $1 billion operating budget that CMS has, I'd really like to use my skill set to analyze that to make sure that we're spending money where we should be. I'd also like to be able to follow my kids as they go up through school. I'll obviously be involved in CMS for 13 years with my youngest just starting kindergarten, and I really want to make a positive impact with everyone where I can up in District 1.
Thank you. Now we have District 2, and District 2 covers most of Western Mecklenburg County. We have Thelma Byers-Bailey, and we have Richard McIlrath, who is the incumbent. So Ms. Byers-Bailey, could you tell us why you're running?
Well, good evening, everyone. I'm Thelma Byers-Bailey. And I'm running because in the past 6 years, I've been president of the Lincoln Heights Neighborhood Association. 4 years ago, we were working to turn our neighborhood school around. We had some successes, but 4 years ago, CMS was running out of funds, and their solution was to close schools all along our corridor, one of them being our Lincoln Heights Elementary School. And as you know, a neighborhood school is a very important lifeblood to a neighborhood association or a neighborhood who's trying to grow. So we went to the board, we gave them some alternative suggestions, and we came away from that process feeling as though our voices weren't heard and our opinions didn't matter. So I'm running so that I want to be a voice on the board for those who have no voice, our children. And I want to make sure that when communities and citizens come before the board, that they have.
And
they
Ms. Byers-Bailey, your time is up. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
Mr. McElrath?
Yes, I'm Mr. McElrath, and I'm the incumbent of the board, District 2. And I taught for 35 years.
Mr. McElrath, I'm sorry. Could you turn the microphone to you so I can hear?
We need microphones. Get me everywhere we go. God, Jesus.
There you go.
You're going to have to move it next. Okay, again, I'm Richard McElrath, and I'm the incumbent in District 2. And I taught for 35 years, and I identified three things that I can affect or I can affect a change in. And one was reading. Working in middle school, there were no more reading teachers before I got there. There were no more reading teachers in middle school, high school, or even college for that matter. So that's one thing I wanted to change. The other was vocational education. We had plenty of programs. We didn't have the internships, and I thought we can affect the difference in the makeup of the communities by dealing with this city.
Thank you. Now we have Dr. Joyce Waddell, who does not have a challenger in this race, but we are glad you are here and would like to hear from you. Dr. Waddell represents District 3, which is much of sort of northeast Mecklenburg County. So why have you decided that you want to stay on the school board?
Good evening, everyone. I'm Joyce Waddell, and I'm asking for your vote for 4 more years. One reason I want to stay, I've had 4 successful years of advocating for you, of advocating for this community, and you have stood with me, and I've stood with you. We've been successful in hiring a new superintendent, and we've put in place some academic changes, curriculum changes, some changes in school safety, some changes in graduating rates. I want to continue to be the voice and the advocate that helps to see CMS grow. I've been in education all of my life and have spent more than 50 years from the classroom teacher, the administration, college work, and I come prepared, and I've run a small business, and I serve on the audit committee for CMS.
Thank you, Dr. Waddell. Appreciate it. Now we have District 4, and Tom Tate represents District 4 now. It is the eastern part of the county, and Queen Elizabeth Thompson is running for the seat as well. So, Reverend Tate, could you please start us off as far as why you're running?
Thank you very much, and thank you all for being here. I am Tom Tate, and welcome to District 4. This is where we are tonight. It's a great district. I have been on the board for 2 terms. That's 8 years, finishing up my 8th year. I have been delighted to see some of the changes that we have been able to produce, and that we have become a board that values our policy as setting the direction with vision, mission, and core beliefs, commitment, so that we know where we're going, and we've found good superintendents, especially now with Heath Morrison, to lead the way, so we don't have to do everything. Of course, the board can't do it all. The board sets the direction. In District 4, we've had some new schools built. Hickory Grove Elementary School, a great new program just started about the time I was coming on the board at Shamrock Gardens Elementary School, a new school this year at McClintock, a middle school. We still have another school from the 2007 bond to be building in District 4, and then also new school in the
Thank you
the
very
next
much,
bond.
Reverend
so thank
Tate.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Thompson?
My name is Queen Elizabeth Thompson, and I'm a native Charlottean. 5 generations of my family have all lived in Charlotte. This is my home. I have been very concerned since I returned following my husband's military retirement to Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools. I have never heard the real issues addressed as to why certain sides of town continue to have failing schools. And these are the issues I would like to put forth as my platform, is to dismantle school failure and to look at staff development and meeting the needs of all children, addressing the criminalization of children by teaching social and behavior skills and fiscal accountability. I think we can do more, and I think we can stretch ourselves. I have been listed as a Charlotte-Mecklenburg School strong advocate for all children. It's been on my evaluations. So I would like to have a chance to meet.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Thank you. Next up, we have District 5, which is South Charlotte, much of South Charlotte. Eric Davis is representing the district now. And against him, we have Edward Donaldson. So, Mr. Davis, why are
Thank
you running?
Lisa. I'm sure many of you will remember 8 years ago, a sitting judge accused our school system of academic genocide, and our Board of Education was the very symbol of dysfunctional government. Well, compare that picture with what you see in your school system today. Our graduation rate has risen from 66% to 81%. More of our students are winning scholarships and performing better on national standards. And I think it's fair to say your Board of Education is performing better. In fact, we've embraced the concept of team. We see our differences as strengths. We see our role as in hiring the top superintendent in the nation to lead our school district and in providing the confident, pragmatic leadership necessary to promote unity and rallying around our school district. Sure, we're imperfect. We're as imperfect as those that we represent, but we're committed to this school district and to the children that we serve, and as a product of CMS, I'd appreciate the opportunity to serve you 4 more years.
All right. Mr. Donaldson.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here this evening. My name is Edward Donaldson. I'm running for District 5. The reason I got into this race is I have a child who is recently entering into, or has recently entered into kindergarten, 2 more on the way. CMS, in my opinion, is not fully serving the needs of the students. The communication in CMS for parents to get information on the choices that their children face in determining what schools we have before us needs to be improved. These are simple things that we can improve on and fix. We also have to work on the student assignment plan. I think the student assignment plan has areas that need to be improved. I'm a native to Charlotte. I graduated from East MEC. I attended Raymond Elementary, McClinic, Amory G. Davis. I've lived here my entire life with the exception of when I was at Winthrop, and I graduated with a degree in political science and history. Thank you.
Thank you. And next up, we have District 6, and we have 3 people running in District 6. This is further sort of southeast Mecklenburg County. We have Paul Bailey, we have Bolin McClung, and we have Doug Rona. So, Mr. Bailey, could you please start us off?
Thank you, Lisa. I decided to run because I have been involved in politics in Matthews for 20 years. I'm presently the mayor pro tem, and I've seen the positive things that can come from a board that cooperates and works together and honors each other's differences and realizes that negotiation brings about the best product. When our District 6 representative decided not to run, I thought it was my time to step forward and bring those positive attitudes to CMS Board of Education. We have an excellent board. We have an excellent superintendent. And although CMS may have many hurdles and challenges, we are going in the right direction. And I want to bring that positive attitude, that cooperation, vision, and new ideas to the board so that we can make our schools in Charlotte-Mecklenburg the schools of choice. Thank you.
Mr. McClung.
Some of our District 6 General Assembly members have everything our teachers need for successful classrooms. I don't understand why Matthew's opponent, tough position in counting his relationships with these representatives as good for our children. By voting for me, you will send a message to Raleigh that teachers deserve better. Thank you very much. Please vote for me, Roland McClung, District 6.
And Mr. Rona.
Good evening. My name is Doug Rona. Thank you for coming out here this evening. I am running. I worked for government public schools for 9 years, up until last June. I started off as a teacher assistant while I received my teacher certification from UNC Charlotte. I've been taught fourth grade for 4 years, and then I worked as a Title I tutor for 4 years as well. I'm here to represent the teachers of our town to make sure they're getting the support they need and not additional burdens on the school board. I'm here to make sure that our schools are places where learning takes place, not just testing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we had several people submit questions beforehand, and many of them hit on some of the same topics. So we hope to hit on most of the topics you asked, and I'll ask the same question to each person running in the district. And you'll have 2 minutes to respond. So we're first going to start off with District 1 and District 3. And my question is, what are the needs of your district? And what's the best way to balance that against the needs of the whole school system? So, Ms. Lennon, could you start off, please? Thank you, Ms. Lennon. Ms. Mast.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mast. Dr. Waddell.
Thank you, and thank you for that question. District 3 is very diverse. We have the high school garage on one side of town, and then you travel, you have Vance on the other side of town. Vance is fairly new, and garage is more traditional. It's been there. So the needs of District 3 continues to be the same needs that we have throughout the school system. Number one, closing the achievement gap between all students as we look at the populations, as we look at subgroups, and to make sure that that gap continues to narrow. And I can see we've made success with that. Lowering the number of students in the classroom. And we have smaller classrooms because we have a lot of Title I schools in District 3. But at the same time, as you look throughout CMS, you see some of the same needs that you see in District 3. So as we focus on District 3, and as we focus on those needs, improvements, we do the same thing for the entire system of CMS. As we look at making every school in District 3 a school of choice, a school where every parent would want to send their children, we see the same thing throughout CMS, making schools schools of choice so that everybody wants to attend there. So we have basic needs, and we are more alike than we are different when it comes to schools, when it comes to improvements. We continue to work on those things that need improving in District 3 and throughout CMS. I've been a strong advocate for District 3. When many of our schools were closed, I stood up and stood firm with you.
Thank you, Dr. Waddell. Now, this next question is for District 6 candidates. Teacher salaries have pretty much remained flat over the past 5 years. This year, state lawmakers decided against a raise and eliminated tenure and extra pay for master's degrees. Do you think the CMS board has a role in counteracting these decisions? If so, what is that? And if not, why not? And we will start with Paul Bailey, and then we'll go on to Mr. McClung and Mr. Rona.
I think the board does have a role in working with our county commissions and our state delegates to work out the issues that exist regarding teacher pay. I am a proponent for increasing teacher salary, and I want to make that clear up front. What it takes in order to negotiate a situation where there is a difference in opinion are people who can cooperate and act as professionals and go forward with our state legislative delegation and talk to them about the needs of our community. Now, I will say these folks in Raleigh have had a struggle. It's never easy when you sit in political office to put a budget together. It's a very difficult thing to do, and there's competing interests. And I believe that the folks in Raleigh have done the things that they could do to get what we need, but we need more, and we need to communicate that to them. And it's going to take people from the Board of Education cooperating together and sending out a message in a professional manner to our lawmakers to let them know that they need to make a commitment to education and improve the situation here in Mecklenburg County. Thank you.
Mr. McClung.
Thank you. I just heard my opponent, the Matthews, say he believes that the people in Raleigh have done what they need to do. I disagree with that 100%. The Charlotte Observer calls me the shadow board member, and not without reason. I attend everything, and one of the things I attended was their Intergovernmental Relationship Committee. Since last October, when they knew that the General Assembly was going to be hard-nosed on education, they formatted a policy every week, and they sent people to Raleigh every week, sometimes three and four times, both school board members and liaisons and attorneys, and they were completely shut out.
We need new General Assembly members from this district. Our school board has never worked harder at trying to get something and been turned away more. Our teachers need more resources. They need more respect from the people in Raleigh. Our General Assembly members, particularly two in District 6, are our brothers. We sent them there to be our brothers. They did absolutely nothing for us. If I'm elected to the school board, I will work hard on the bully pulpit to find new people willing to serve in Raleigh who will go there and get what our teachers and our students need. Thank you very much. I'm Bolin McClung, running for school board in District 6.
All right, Mr. Rona.
I will be a strong advocate for increased teacher pay in our schools. I am against the performance-based increases that they're suggesting. All of our teachers work hard. I would work to find a smart way to increase pay and also retain our teachers and attract new teachers, something like a bonus plan that could be paid out every 3 years that would increase with tenure. And so that way teachers will be motivated to stay in the school system to increase a bonus pay, bonus payment 1, 2, or 3 years down the road that'll be more than their last. I am against bringing in outside groups like the Broad Foundation and Bill and Melinda Gates that want to run our schools like corporations. Schools are not corporations. Students are not products that are marketed to the public. They're individual people that have to be dealt with. Schools are very unique, and we need to keep that in mind. So the performance-based pay, being a teacher, I just am dead set against implementing anything like that, and I will fight to prevent anything from like that being implemented in our schools. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Now, the next question is for District 2. First, we'll start with Ms. Byers-Bailey, and then we'll move on to Mr. McIlrath. The question is, how do you grade the job CMS is doing of providing good choices for students' education? And should the district continue to expand those options? If so, how do you recommend improving the educational options available to families at CMS?
I don't think that we have enough choice. I think that's one of the reasons people are opting to go to charter schools or other non-public entities is because parents don't feel they have choices. I think parents want some control over what type of education their children have. And I think if we expand our offerings in magnet schools, in partial magnet schools, and other themed types of schools, that we give people a better choice, we give children a better opportunity to educate around an interest that they may have as a natural interest, and we can expand on that and hold their attention and develop their education in a much broader and more specific event.
All right, Mr. McIlrath.
That's a good question you asked.
And please slide the microphone over so we can all hear.
That's a very good question. And if you would say, hold it and let's see, you would find out the answer to that question because it's been on the table for months now. The programs will be set and you'll have a home school. And that homeschool can devise and put out what they want to do. And so you're going to have all kind of selections and choices. And we see that as we knew we were going to have to do something like that in order to compete and continue to do the job that we've been doing all the while.
Thank you. The next question goes to District 5. Eric Davis and Edward Donaldson. What's your take on the longer school day and the later start and end times for elementary students? If you support changes to the schedule, how would you suggest the board do this? And if not, why not? So first, Mr. Davis, could you please start?
Sure. Thanks. Well, a little bit of context. The reason why the board was confronted with that decision was the way our budget works. We're handed a budget by the state and the county and then have to work within the confines of that budget. The choice that the board had in terms of how many schools we operate, what bell schedules we operate under, how many teachers we employ, was all defined by the amount of budget we were being that was being cut from our revenue. And so the choice came down to, do we lay off more teachers and keep the bell schedules that we have in place, or do we adjust the bell schedules and keep teachers? We chose teachers, and we chose that because that's the most important person in a student's education, second to their parents. Do I think these bell schedules are good? Well, no. I don't think laying off teachers is good either, nor do I think many of the other things we were forced to do good. What I would like to see is that we come up with a solution. Our superintendent gave a large group of citizens a tremendous access to our staff. They worked through 8 different scenarios. Each one of those would, at the end of the day, cost us more money. And so he didn't bring them as a recommendation to us because he knows that we're focused first on providing the teaching staff in each school. I do think that with collaboration, with some creative thought process, and possibly with a waiver from the state, we could develop a solution that will enable us to create a better bell schedule, maybe not back to where it was, but better than what we have today. As far as the longer school day, I don't know about you, but we live in a pretty competitive world, and our students go to school less than many of the students that our children are going to be competing with. I do think our teachers need the latitude to use that time as effectively as possible, and in some cases to give a student a break, particularly the very young ones. But on the whole, I'm in favor of the longer day.
All right, Mr. Donaldson.
Thank you. I'm actually in favor of changing the structure of the later day schedule. I do not believe that any child should be on a school bus or getting home after 4:30 unless they're dealing with activities such as extracurricular. I understand that we have budget issues, but I believe that there's more options other than choosing a late schedule or cutting teachers. There are plenty of studies that we can look at as possibly saving money by, instead of franchising out to other organizations, going to our local communities, such as our colleges, having them help produce some of these independent studies. That would be some savings. There are other areas that we can look at that we can find to save it, but I am in favor of providing access via changing our buses around. I understand that will cost more money, but I want to ensure that our children get home at a reasonable hour, that they're able to. This will give. In terms of doing the, start by looking at just our line item by item on the budget. I know we recently commissioned a study to look at the late day schedule. We spent over $10,000 to do that. That could have been a $10,000 savings that we could have just looked internally and communicated amongst the board members and used a common sense approach and saved $10,000 right there. And there are many areas just like that that we, in my opinion, waste money. I understand that we do have restrictions on what we can and cannot do with the funds, but I do believe there's areas that we can certainly save.
So, Lisa, in answer to that question, I think that exactly demonstrates why you need stability on the Board of Education. You need members of the board who've been through that process, who've made the difficult decisions, who know how much money
we've
cut
from
positions.
All right, now we go to District 4. What is your personal philosophy on charter schools, and should CMS and charters collaborate more in the future? We start with Ms. Thompson.
I worked as a special populations coordinator for Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools, and that means I monitored federal compliance. I have experience in that in every state I've ever worked in federal compliance. I was trying to get services for the students at Butler High School, and the associate deputy superintendent told me that these children would not be served and challenged me to write a charter school grant and application. I wrote the grant and was approved for Crossroads Charter High School, not knowing much about charter schools. But having had that experience, I really disagree with charter schools. I think that they are sometimes wasting money because you can bring people in there to work who have no experience in school management. And I can prove that there are millions of dollars that went in our taxpayer funds doing things that really was not in compliance and was wasteful overall because they lack of the experience. And I think that there's not enough oversight in these use of federal funds and so forth. Many times these charter schools are just small, regular schools. But I wrote that program to be a dropout intervention program, and it was going to have be the first charter vocational education school. So I have some I'm a critic now based on what I've seen actually happen.
Thank you. Now, Ms. Reverend Tate.
Thank you very much. Well, charter schools are here, and we have to recognize that and deal with them. I think that part of the difficulty we have is that the oversight really is not there, and there are places in our country where local school boards help with that oversight and actually help more with the chartering process, and even in places can charter schools themselves if there are special needs that could be met. I think that our laws ought to be changed in that way so that we would have some oversight. There really hasn't been a whole lot of desire on the part of on my part to get involved a lot with charter schools because we've got all these 160 public schools that we've got to deal with and make sure that they're educating every single student who's there. But we have them, and so I think that what we need to do is to work with them. I was delighted when Dr. Morrison gathered charter school leaders together. I was glad when MECED was bringing charter schools together so that all of us could meet some of these people and get to know them. I think we need to work on that. But we need to look at it from an economic point of view as well. We have a high school in Charlotte with 1,200, 1,300, 1,400 students and a principal and an assistant principal or two. We also have charter schools for high school with 200 students, principal. The money just doesn't work. And the fact that there are flexibilities that CMS doesn't have, now some I don't want. I want us to be able to make sure that every student can get to school via transportation. That's not something I'd like to see public schools not have to do. I think we need to provide meals for our students who are coming to school so that they're ready to study and ready to learn. But I do think that charter schools have got to play more by some of the same rules that we have. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we're going to open it to your questions. So we have a few ways that you can ask your questions. If you'd like to ask a question from the floor, make your way to the aisle. And we have two folks, Greg Collard over here and Bill Anderson over here with microphones that will try to come around and get you. And you can also interact with us digitally. So we have an interactive polling program called Poll Everywhere. And to submit a question that way, you just take out your cell phone, you start a new text message, and in the to field, where you'd normally enter a contact's name, you put 22333. So just like there. And then in the body of the message, type that number, 451924, space, and then your question. And then the question will appear on our screen, and I'll see it over here as well. You can also tweet to @poll, P-O-L-L, and then space, again, 451924, and then your question. So do we have any questions from the audience at this point? Yep, you got one back there.
Okay, my name is Maya Hobgood, and I go to West Charlotte High School. And this is a question about shuttle stops, and gas is expensive right now, and parents have to drive to shuttle stops, and I'm wondering if you plan on removing any shuttle stops, and how are shuttle stops helping the CMS budget?
Say your question one more time.
Sorry.
The last part?
Do you plan on removing shuttle stops, and how are they helping the CMS budget?
Do you plan to remove shuttle stops in order to save money, basically?
Yeah.
Let's direct that then to the district where West Charlotte's at. So, Mr. McIlrath, did you hear the question?
You're talking about, I know I didn't.
What to do about magnet shuttle stops?
And what do you think about magnet shuttle stops?
Yes.
And would you make cuts to them in order to save money? Is that the question? Would you expand them so there aren't shuttle stops? Is that the question?
Okay.
Shorten the shuttle stop.
Okay. At the moment, we have shuttle stops where we drive to our bus, then we go to school. How is this helping the budget, even though parents have to use our own money to drive back and forth?
All right. So you would like to have more busing for magnets, basically, so that parents aren't having to cart kids and stuff.
I think I understand what
you're
saying.
Okay, so Mr. McIlrath, could you please address that first?
Okay, to me, it's a problem. I think, if I'm not wrong, Berry has the same problem, and they issue tickets or passes to ride on a city transportation, and I really don't like it because if it was my daughter or something and she's got to go to the school, she's going to ride on a regular bus, I wouldn't like that too much. How we can fix it, I don't know. I see it as a problem for some people.
Is there any money in the budget to fix it in your eyes?
I think it was, we'd fix it.
All right. Ms. Byers-Bailey?
All right. Regarding the shuttle stops, I've never really grasped why there had to be shuttle stops rather than just a bus to get people to a magnet school, except for the fact that they're short on funds and they were trying to make the trip shorter. I don't know that that's the best solution. I'm not sure what the alternative solution is to use public transportation. There are some routes that might be a comfortable solution, and there are some routes that I don't think it would be appropriate to have a teenager on, much less a younger child. So unless we improve our transit system to the point, our city transit system, CATS, to the point where our children feel safe on those choices of transportation, I don't know that there's a solution, certainly not in the short term.
I suggest that maybe we ask some of our current board members that question too.
Sure.
And some of the people.
Ms. Lennon?
Since there are very few District 1 magnet schools, although we've now gotten two and we're getting another one, my district has to be served by shuttle stops. What shuttle stops are, they're not for elementary schools. They're only for middle and high school magnets. And so the students come to a collective spot from all over the area, and they ride one single bus to the magnet school. So it saves time and it saves transportation dollars rather than a single bus driving, meandering through suburban neighborhoods, picking up one student here and 3 miles down the road another student. So there are consolidated shuttle stops. It does limit who can participate, but you It is a magnet school, which is a choice to attend. So while I am 100% supportive of magnets, and I hope we have more, the more magnets we have, the less need we would have for shuttle stops, because we would have magnets all throughout the county. So I'm a big advocate for more magnets in my area. But shuttle stops are absolutely essential. When I actually had students in elementary school, my two daughters who are now in college age, when they went to David Cox as a magnet, we actually organized our own shuttle stop because the bus route was an hour and 15 minutes long. So all the parents got together and met at the caboose down in. That was 10 years before shuttle stops ever happened. So when we started discussing them as a board, I had already lived it, and it cut off my students' transportation time, and it also saves a lot of money on transportation.
Ms. Mast, would you like a chance to answer that?
As far as these shuttle stops go, I think in the whole scheme of the entire transportation part, going back to that question regarding the length of schedule and one elementary day, my budget, that's hard to say without doing complete analysis of the entire system. And I think the shuttle stop should be part of that analysis. I don't think we've gone into enough detail yet to make sure that the transportation is what it could be for everyone. So I'd like to see some more analysis, deeper dive into that, especially in the work of the transportation department, to see what other options might be there and make sure the numbers before now really is what things are possible.
All right. And I have a question that we got through the polling, and I'm going to direct this to Eric Davis and Mr. Donaldson. So, Mr. Donaldson, I'd like you to start first. Other than pay, what should the board be doing to help improve teacher retention in CMS?
Teacher retention, one of the areas that I think we need to focus on is improving our discipline in our schools. some of the problems are teachers get discouraged by the lack of respect that some students show in our classrooms. And it's important that we support the teachers and the principals in their decisions. We need to go and provide alternative means of education for any child that may unfortunately be expelled from that school, but the purpose is to bring them back into the system and back into the fold. We also need to improve discipline by offering students who may not be pursuing an education, college education, other opportunities and venues that will keep their interest, because I believe part of the discipline problem is a result of a lack of interest of the students who may not be pursuing the curriculum that we are currently teaching our children.
All right, Mr. Davis.
Sure. Well, given the current state-provided compensation, benefits, professional development system, about the only reason why a teacher would remain employed with any school district in North Carolina today is because they absolutely love it, because they have a heartfelt dedication to educating children. At the same time, teachers are much like any other career professional. What means the most to them is, do I work for someone that I believe in? Do I work for a cause that's worthy of my efforts? Am I cared for and valued and developed as I work here? And am I fairly compensated? So it's not just pay, but that's a part of it. What we need our legislature to do is look at the totality of how we hire, retain, develop, advance, and pay teachers. It's a system, and every part of it needs to be reviewed. A current example is today we spend so much more on health care. Over the past 5 years, our total budget has only gone up $40 million, but our health care and retirement costs have gone up $60 million. In essence, we can't pay teachers more until we decrease the cost of our state health care plan. Then we also need to implement a meaningful and fair evaluation system that's not based solely on standardized testing, but it's also not based solely on teacher observations. Neither one of those get the job done. It needs to be a comprehensive review that includes the review of the principal, the impact that parents feel, peers that work with the teachers, the own teachers' aspirations, and the students' performance.
And you can work on that as a board.
Many of those things we can promote and develop, but we are dependent on the state for the vast majority of the regulations that we employ teachers under today.
Yes.
Question for Mr. Bailey. North Carolina legislature in the past few years has passed a lot of bills that the Board of Education and CMS leadership have disagreed with or have had, you know, kind of opposite philosophy on what's good for students and teachers. And they just seem to have two very different worldviews in Raleigh versus in Charlotte right now. And you sought out and received the endorsements from a couple of the legislators that spearheaded a lot of the legislation that has kind of been fought against in CMS. So I guess my question is, in general, do you feel that you would be a bridge between CMS and Raleigh in helping CMS to better influence Raleigh, or would you be a bridge of the Raleigh worldview kind of infiltrating into CMS? And then could you specifically talk about some legislation that your endorsers passed that you disagree with, and maybe some CMS policies where you disagree with CMS and you're more on the Raleigh side?
As far as the endorsements are concerned, I actually gained 15 endorsements from elected officials in District 6, including the legislative body, Town of Matthews, Town of Mint Hill. And these people are endorsing me because they know that I can work within the community. They know that I have experience and proven track record. And more important than this, they know that I'm a professional, that I've got character, I've got credibility. And even though we've disagreed in the past on a lot of issues, that I have stepped forward and worked to get solutions that work for the good of the community. In this case, those solutions would work for the good of our students. Now, yes, I will be a bridge from CMS to Raleigh. And I have already told two of our legislative delegates that I don't agree with some of the things they have done. We've had frank conversations. We have a relationship that spans 20 years. And because of that relationship, and because of our ability to discuss as gentlemen and work together, I've been able to tell them that I disagree and that we need to make these changes. Some of the things I don't agree with is not increasing teacher pay. I abhor the aspect of guns on a campus. I do not like that, and that has got to change. If you've got some other examples, those are the two that I'm most sincere about.
And I can do a rebuttal on that?
You both can.
Thank you. Okay, he said he's known these men for 20 years. I'll tell you who I'm specifying that's on his top of his list: Bill Brawley, Bob Rucco. In the newspaper, when he released his endorsements, he said he asked for and was pleasantly surprised to receive their endorsement. If you ask for somebody's endorsements, don't you think you ought to know what they were doing? I'll be gracious. I don't think he knew a thing about school policy that these men were promoting. I don't think he knew anything about guns. I don't think my opponent knew anything about the damage that the salary was doing to the teachers. Had I been in that position, I would have never asked for that kind of support. And it goes to one more point: transportation. He was trading on these people's good name, but not telling you that they were the worst possible enemies of public education. Thank you. I'm Bolin McClung, and I stand by everything I say.
Mr. Rona, would you like a chance?
Sure. I'm here to represent progressive ideas, research-based ideas, and I'll be working to support progressives to replace those that have made these decisions in Raleigh. Thank you.
All right. Do we have another question? We have a question back here.
Good evening. My name is Tamalade Aldenigi. I go to Cato Middle College High School. I know that's in District 3. I know there's also another middle college being built in the Levine campus, but my question for the board is, what else are we doing to encourage college readiness because I know that there's a big change whenever I attend CPCC classes and high school classes.
Is there a particular district you'd like to ask that to?
No, just anyone in general on the board.
How about we start, Reverend Tate, would you address that? And then Ms. Thompson, you also have a crack at that too.
Certainly, thank you. Well, our middle college program is a terrific program right now with the one that we have up and running. 100% of the students are graduating. I mean, that's you don't do any better than that in high school. That's a terrific thing for us to do, and that's why we have on the books at least two more. Is it just two? just two so far. There's an early college, too, that we're looking at, which would be 9 through 12, not just 11 and 12. But it's a great program, and I think beyond that, what we're doing is trying to boost every one of our comprehensive high schools and every one of our magnet schools to make sure that the students are getting all the things that they need in order to be able to graduate on time. But beyond graduation, beyond getting ready for another college or something like that, we're also looking at doing much more with our career technical education or vocational education to make sure that however a student is graduating, that they're ready to go to what they need to do next with a job or with everything they need for college as much as possible without remediation. You know, we want people to leave CMS students and be ready to go. But it really has to do with educating everyone in all of our high schools and providing all of the programs, teachers that really know what they're doing, and we've got great teachers. Oh, don't get me wrong. We have great teachers in CMS. Make sure that they have the ability to educate their children.
Ms. Thompson.
I am very interested in workforce development. The bottom line to all education is to lead to workplace and the workplace environment. I think CMS is behind in its career and technical education programs. Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools sent me to Tampa to look at the programs there. Their children learn how to build bridges. They learn how to do mechanical engineering. They learn how to fly airplanes right in school. We have not reached that kind of sophistication and in-depth looking at what we're teaching students in terms of skills. Some schools are designed where all of the students wear uniforms based on their occupation. If they're a business person, if they're going into medicine, they dress accordingly and make it look like a magma cosma world where they all are representing different career interests. Many students have never seen the careers that they're saying they want to go into because we limit those opportunities, we limit those experiences. So we have to do a better job to stay competitive. Even the counties around us, like Monroe and Rock Hill, have more in-depth career education programs that works for the college student as well as those that are going in technical careers. And colleges have found that many people who start out going to college also drop out. They need skills that they can also enter the workplace with.
All right, and now I have a question from for districts 3 and 4. What can the board do to help with overcrowded schools in your district? And we'll start with Ms. Mast first. Oh, 3 and 4. What am I talking about? We'll first start with Dr. Waddell.
Again, Joyce Waddell, CMS Board of Education, District 3. And the question is about overcrowded schools.
Yeah, what can the board do to help with overcrowded, to help, work on overcrowded schools,
the board
take some of the crowding out of them.
Thank you. The board is doing a lot already. The board is looking at, measuring, examining, and moving forward with options for many students, with providing experiences for students. We're looking at performing schools where students can do a lot of the work that they do by computers. We're looking at increasing technology. and most of all the bonds. We're moving forward. We get this bond package passed, we're going to be able to build new schools. We're going to be able to add curriculum areas and spaces for curriculum areas that we don't have space for now. Do you know CMS has more than 10,000 students within the last 5 years? So the student population continues to increase, and we have to provide for those students. The bond package will allow the building of new schools in District 3. Stakesford Road will get a brand new school. Druid Hills will get additional classroom space for science, for technology, a gym for sports. We're looking at those things that will provide opportunities, and as we look at overcrowdedness, it will alleviate a lot of it.
Ms. Thompson.
Well, I'm concerned because I graduated from J.H. Gunn when it was a high school, and it had some solidly built buildings that had concrete foundations. The Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board tore solid buildings down to put up trailers. And I don't get it. And I see some schools get kept and restored, some schools get torn down rather than remodeling buildings to expand their capacity. I think we have some fiscal waste, and I think we have inside trading, because some of the schools that they remodeled and built new schools sit halfway empty, or they abandon them, and they're letting charter schools rent those schools for almost nothing and giving us their renting and making money off the taxpayers' dollars. Look at Midwood High School. It's also a school that raised bond money over and over to be remodeled, and I hear they're being rented out for almost nothing. They're charging $700 a room on taxpayers' dollars. I think we ought to be upset because I don't think we've had the management and the fiscal oversight that we deserve.
All right, Reverend Tate.
Thank you again. Well, we do have overcrowded schools throughout the district, and we need to look at this district-wide, but part of it is the bonds, as Dr. Waddell had to say. Well, we currently have a school, Albemarle Road Elementary School, that has 1,300 students. There are more students in the mobile units than there are in the regular brick-and-mortar school. This is a Title I school, which means that there are lots of challenges, not students who can't learn, but lots of challenges that we need to address. Also, lots of kids who don't speak English as their first language. In our new bond referendum that we hope will pass, we're going to look at building a new K-8 school that will have a language component to it that will relieve some for magnet seats and other language schools, but also have a small footprint to relieve the overcrowding at Albemarle Road Elementary School. That's one of the things we can do. Also, Oakhurst, the school that was closed when we were fighting all of those difficult days when the budget kept shrinking a few years ago through the Great Recession, that school is coming back. The board decides how that school works. We're looking at a magnet program, a STEAM magnet, science, technology, education, arts, and mathematics. We've talked about it being a full magnet. We're talking about it being a partial magnet with a small footprint again, so that we can have people from the neighborhood and everybody benefiting from those from that program. The board makes that ultimate determination. And when we have built new schools recently, when we started out to renovate some schools, we actually built new schools less expensively. Now they're better schools than they would have been had they just been renovated, and we saved money. We are doing some really good things around the district to make sure that we don't have too many kids in schools. We don't have enough money, though, to do everything we need.
Thank you. Now we have a question back here.
I'm not sure if the board can impact this, but I have a daughter at high school, and one of the observations I have is that she takes math the first semester of this year and may not see it till the second semester a year later. And it's kind of like anything where you quit doing it for a while, your talents fall off. So it's not about the length of the school day, it's what we can do with it. And at that same school, in the high schools in general, the classes are an hour and a half, and I can't pay attention for an hour and a half, so I don't think they can. So I'm wondering what the school board can do to impact what occurs during the school day, and if we can get some more continuous education in some of these core classes.
All right. Is there a particular district you'd like? What school's your...
Well, I go across 5 and 6, so either one.
Okay. Well, then 6, let's direct that question to you. So, Mr. Rona, let's start with you on that one.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you about the length of time that students can focus. With the length of our day, I originally, when I first heard about it, I thought it'd be a good thing until I saw how the time was being used. And the students, by the end of the day, weren't able to focus. Not a lot of productive things were happening in the classrooms. So I definitely agree that we need to look at how we use our school day, the length of the classes, make sure we're using research-based policies to implement, making sure that kids are up and active and moving around. There's a lot of research out there that kids that are active can focus longer, can pay attention, and do a better job in the classroom. So I think we need to look at the research that's out there and implement those policies in our schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. McClung.
Thank you. Aside from teaching just a few semesters at Central Piedmont in a technical class of printing, I've never been in the classroom, but I do think I understand the question. The most important thing in the classroom is not the length of time, it's the rigor of the course. Now, I'm not exactly sure if I'm in favor of Common Core or not, but over the last 3 years, I've seen the way the deputy superintendent has prepared our teachers to implement the Common Core, and it is based on rigor and comprehension thought process. I think that's the solution. I do not like the testing that's tied to the Common Core, but inside the classroom, I think that a rigorous course of study will help us first compete nationally, and then once we're sure that we can compete nationally, then our students compete in a very rigorous way internationally. Thank you.
Mr. Bailey.
A few weeks ago, I saw a program on CBS Sunday Morning about a gentleman in New York City who was taking at-risk children, and he would bring them to school in the morning, and they would play and exercise and do sports activities for 2 hours before they went into the classroom. Their achievement level went up, and it was remarkable of what he was doing with these kids that only a year ago were at risk. I think what that says, and all of us live in an environment where we're at work, we're professionals, we don't sit in our chairs for 3 and 4 hours. We don't go to conferences or seminars and sit for 2 and 3 hours. You get a break every hour. And kids probably need that more. Now, I've got an engineering degree from NC State and a master's degree from South Carolina. I did 19 years of sitting behind a desk and listening and learning. And I'll tell you, I couldn't have sat in the classroom in English for an hour and a half, maybe not in Spanish for an hour and a half. Now, math or physics or chemistry, yeah, I probably could have sat there all day and done that. But I think it's very important for the kids to have a break, for classes to be shorter. I think an hour and a half is more what you would expect in a college environment, and I don't think our children at young ages can really stay focused over that long a period of time. Thank you.
All right, thanks. And we have a question. Oh, you have a follow-up.
Simply, we see math one semester and not for a year later. And I got it that, you know, the different course, but I think core classes like math and some of the others need to be taught consistently and continuously if we're going to excel.
All right. Thanks for that input. And got a question over here.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming out and for also stepping up to serve the community. I appreciate it. My name is Mike Masto. I live in District 4. I have my son who's in kindergarten at Shamrock Gardens and two more coming up behind him. Dr. Morrison just released his 5-year strategic plan. So I'm interested to hear from you if there are elements of the plan that you feel especially strong about that you would prioritize. But I'd be maybe even more interested to hear if there are elements of the plan that anybody up there disagrees with and would maybe like to see us go in a different direction from what Dr. Morrison is suggesting. So I'm not really directing at anyone in particular, but if anyone has especially a disagreement, I would say, with the direction that Dr. Morrison would like to take us in.
Does anyone have a special disagreement with the strategic plan? Okay, Ms. Mass, please tell us what that disagreement is.
The biggest disagreement I have with the strategic plan is the data that is missing as far as baseline data goes. If you're going to have a strategic plan be effective, you have to have measurable goals that have been established up front. They could be called SMART goals. They should be strategic, measurable, attainable, results-oriented, and timely. And I sat at the board presentation the first time that the board heard the presentation from the district a couple of weeks ago, and there were over 85 performance indicators under all 6 of the total goals. Of those 85 performance indicators, which is what we're going to be trying to measure ourselves against, over 65 of them did not have set goals yet. Some of them are waiting for baseline data at the end of this particular school year. Others were waiting for test results from the state, for instance. But regardless of the reason why they didn't have data in there, a strategic plan cannot be effective if you do not have your measurements set up front. So the lack of all those is concerning to me. The other big issue that I'm concerned with is that the school leadership teams have not submitted their school improvement plans yet. The school improvement plans are an important part of any district strategic plan. And the financial alignment as well, coming into the budget season coming up in the beginning of next year, financial aspect to the strategic plan is completely missing right now.
Ms. Lennon, would you like to respond to that?
There is really nothing in the strategic plan that I have to take issue with. There are 6 goals. Those goals were developed by the superintendent engaging this community. He had 22 task forces with over 500 volunteers. He has been from every nook and cranny of this community to every Rotary, the Lake Norman Chamber, dinner groups, coffee chats with parents, and he listened to what parents said they really needed for their kids over the next 5 years to help them excel. The number one goal is obviously academic. If there was one that you could say I love, and it's number 6, and it's the goal of transformation, to transform each school into a very unique environment for each student. But we got to start with number one. Our first goal always has to be academic success for every student. And so within each one of those goals, there are focus areas. Within each one of the focus areas, there are measurables. And some of those measurables, because of the implementation of PowerSchool, we just can't drop in. But just because the data is not available doesn't mean we sit idly. The goals are in place. They are strategic. They are smart. They're actually beyond smart. They're phenomenal. And they're going to take this system from a good school system to a phenomenal, great school system that is going to be recognized worldwide. I am extremely excited about this plan. The rollout of this plan is really just going on right now. I attended Monday night at Mallard Creek High School, where parents and teachers and staff actually heard this. And I had someone who was a banker. I don't want to mention which bank, because it's not the bank that a few of my colleagues up here work for, but it's that other bank. And he got up and he said, "This looks like something that our bank would have presented as a strategic plan." And this is the number one bank in the country, I think. It's up in there, that American bank. So business leaders are recognizing this strategic plan as the plan to help move us forward. Now, my colleagues and I, we except for Mr. Tate, we were sworn in to the board right at the same time that the last plan was launched, so we didn't have anything to do with that. And from what I've talked to staff, they didn't really have a lot to do with it. It was developed by our former superintendent. This plan is the plan of the people and of the community, and it is going to be phenomenal for
our
schools.
Thanks, Ms. Lennon. You guys have about 30 seconds to respond to that.
I'm Boland McClung, the person the Observer called the shadow board member. I was there when Mr. Frank Barnes, our chief accountability officer, gave the presentation with the missing data. That was followed up with an explanation by the superintendent that, well, you know, we can't do everything to begin with, so we're going to start with the stuff that we have the data on. I think that was an excellent approach. You can't start without the data, so you start with what you've got. Very pleased with it. I have 30 seconds. My two favorite points number two and number four.
All right. You can look up number two and number four.
Yes.
So, Mr. Rona or Mr. Bailey, do you have 30 seconds?
I don't know if it's necessarily a disagreement, but the first thing that jumped out at me when I saw the plan was just how many different one-offs we have, all these STEM and STEAM. There's all these different one-offs, and I think that our goal should be make all of our schools of that quality. And why are we splintering our school system to have all these different one-off schools that do this and do that when our focus should be on all of our schools and bringing them up to that level? Thank you.
All right, thank you. We have a question back here.
Yes, School Board District 2. What are we going to do to urge and move forth with the expedient use of bond money? In School Board District 2, one of our high schools received bond money in 2007 and 2012. Nothing had been implemented at that school. Now, Northwest School of the Arts is in there now. Northwest, you talk about buses. They move from 9 o'clock in the morning to 3 o'clock in the afternoon to the music factory because three disciplines in that school cannot function in the classroom because there is no space. The bond money would cut down on transportation costs if there is expedient use, immediate use of the money. What can the board do?
So how to speed up getting some of that bond money into construction? District 2, Ms. Byers-Bailey, I'll have you start with this.
Okay. I absolutely agree that we need to expedite the use of the bond money to do the things that the bond money was intended for. The schools have been waiting too long for the use of that those funds already. And they need to get those facilities up and running as soon as possible. So I absolutely agree that those funds need to be used. Both if there's any money left from the previous bonds, then I want to question why hasn't that money been used already. But we certainly, depending upon, hopefully the bond will be passed, and we want those funds released to those schools and get those facilities up and running.
Mr. McElrath?
As far as I know.
And could you pull the mic over to you? I know it's heavy.
Yeah. As far as I know, the school on that you're talking about is scheduled to have used the bond money. As a matter of fact, there were some areas of the school that the principal wanted that weren't on bond. And so we got Guy Chamberlain and a whole bunch of people together, and now it's going to be on. That was the auditorium. They're going to get a brand new auditorium in lieu of everything else they're going to get down there. So I don't know where you're getting the information that there's nothing going to happen to that school. There's going to be a lot going to happen to that school.
No, not right now, because I just got to wrap this up kind of quickly. Well,
Klingberg got money in 2007. In 2012, it had not been spent on the school.
Because the county commission stopped all capital funding during the recession.
Mr. McElrath, do you want to answer that?
Folks.
What can the school board do to make sure that these monies are spent far more rapidly than they have been?
Okay. There is a notion out here that the Board of Education controls anything. We don't. Folks, I'm not being funny about this. I think it's something that, you know, I think, like say, Eric and myself were sitting in a meeting, and they were talking about what they're going to do. I said, look, are we going to have any input into this? They said, no. I said, you're wasting my time then. The county, we send them a list of things in order that we like it done. They can mix it up and do what they want to do with it. And we can't do anything about it. So they're in charge. We only can put out what we would like to do, but they tell us what we will do. And often that's a lot different than what we say. So the people you know to go to, you need to go to the county, or you need to get somehow get us to have control over what we think is the best thing for the school system. But we don't have that monetarily. When I came on the board, we adopted the thing. I said the only thing we have is a scalpel. We can cut, but we can't raise funds, and we have no control over funds.
All right.
And if you want to do something, help us get control over the funds and the projects that we do.
So we have time for one more question, and then we're going to start wrapping things up. So let's see. We got a question in back here.
My name is Makai Rohde, and I'm attending PLC High School. And an issue that I feel is almost never mentioned is bullying. And
Oh, take your time.
And my question is, it's a general question. It doesn't, like, go to one specific district, but it's how will you address the bullying issue going on today, and what plans are you willing to put into action?
Say that one more time.
How will you address the bullying issue going on today, and what plans are you willing to put into action?
Okay, let's ask Mr. Donaldson and Mr. Davis to handle this one. It was, how are you going to address bullying? What kinds of things would you like to see either expanded or in schools to cut down on bullying?
Bullying should not exist in any circumstance for any reason. I believe that the school system has got plans in place, and they're constantly changing those plans to adapt to the situations. We need to allow for the discipline to take place if bullying does exist, and the proper handling of that situation, and in some cases, the removal of the student if necessary, or separation in order to ensure that all students feel safe in the environment of learning and that we focus on the learning. So I totally support the administration in this.
All right.
So one of the roles of the Board of Education is we serve in the judiciary fashion of reviewing student disciplinary hearings, and that's the clearest and most direct means for the Board of Education to support our superintendent and principals when they enforce our no bullying policy, in that we review their decisions, we apply our own judgment